here you are again. It's you and me. I'm your favorite podcast host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. And in this episode, I'm going to bring you the one and only Andy Storch. Andy Storch's story is a super killer because he went from the cush corporate got it made kind of life to the scary, I'm going to be on my own entrepreneurial type of life. And he's all about organizational leadership and talent development. So much so, he's written a book about it, and he's also led his own conferences on the topic of talent development. He rubs shoulders with some of the best people in the industry, like Liz Wiseman. If you don't know who that is, check out her book titled Multipliers. When I read it, it was a game changer for myself as a leader and for the people that I lead. All right, enough of that. Buckle in for a ride because you're going to get me and Andy Storch getting into it. Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the Upgraded Life. All right, I am here with Andy Storch for another episode of the Upgraded Life podcast. Andy is a fellow podcaster. He's got two podcasts up and going. He's also working on a book, and he's always got a lot of impressive, important projects, a lot of irons in the fire, so to speak. And the name of the book that you have in the works is Own Your Career, Own Your Life. And I love that title. I love the symbolism that's in there and the value words of ownership. So Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I really want to jump into this. You know, obviously tell us a little bit about yourself, but I want to hear about this book and the genesis of it and what you hope it will do for people when they choose to read it. So thanks for being on the show, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Nick, for reaching out and inviting me and having me on the show. I always love and appreciate opportunities to share things with people, especially if they're going to be valuable and hopefully help people, which is, I know, you know, part of your mission is to help people upgrade their life and their mindset. And I think we're on a very similar mission. So I really appreciate you having me on. I have a background, working kind of a lot of different jobs over the years. Went to undergrad at the University of Florida, where I live back again now in Orlando. I'm a husband, I'm a father of two kids. And along the way of all those different jobs, I got into consulting and got to travel the world and meet a lot of different people and get some different perspectives, but still was, I think, kind of wanting more. The moment or the thing that really shifted things for me, I know you're really big into books and personal development, was a few years ago when I read the book, The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod in 2016. And that was the first personal development book I came across. And wow. I discovered it because I heard him on a podcast. So power of podcasting. Since then, I have just been on a mission to upgrade my life, much like you are as well. Just reading and learning as much as I can. I left the consulting job I was in to become an independent consultant with a smaller organization for the last 3 years and recently just went out on my own. I primarily focus, the work I do is in the corporate talent development space. So I sell and run a lot of training and development programs, leadership development, business acumen, finance, sales training, things like that. And throughout the time, you know, I started a couple podcasts. I've made tons of friends, hosted my own conference in January. We can go into any of that stuff. But you asked about the book as well. And I think, you know, as I was reading more of these books, meeting more people, you know, interviewing people who had written books, I started to think, you know, well, maybe I can write a book as well. But I didn't know what it was going to be until I was at a conference last November, November 2019 in London. And I heard someone named Jeff Goins give a talk about how to write a best-selling book. And there were some things from that talk that just kind of clicked in my head. You know, you listen to these talks at conferences or podcasts or whatever, and sometimes you just need something to hit you at the right moment.
Sure.
Right? That right advice, you could hear it 10 times, but it hits you at the right moment. And that combined with a conversation with a friend who was interviewing me over the lunch break of that conference for his YouTube channel, just everything clicked in my head on what that book needed to be. And I thought back to a couple talks I had given for clients or at conferences the previous year. And I put all that together in an outline. And I had the title kind of pop out to me right away, Own Your Career, Own Your Life. And on January 1st, I started writing it. And I finished the first draft in, I don't know, April. Nice. And so now I am, fast by, I guess, many measures. Certainly could be faster, could be slower. And so now I'm just working on reviewing it. I've hired an editor and planning on publishing it later this year. Awesome. But it's all about helping people stop drifting and really take control of their future.
Sure. And I've been, I've been a professional helper for a long time, an observer of people's behaviors. And so when I look at the things that you have going on, podcasts, structuring your own seminar and live, convention, writing the book, going out on your own, you're whole hog into this, helping people be better, right? Their own personal development journey. There's got to be a reason behind that. I mean, some people might dabble in it, but you've got a book, you've got podcasts, you know, all the things that you're doing. This is near and dear to your life. I want to hear about that.
Well, I think it was through reading and learning and a lot of self-discovery that I learned who I am, what I'm about, and what drives me. And I have decided that my mission is to fulfill my true potential, and in so doing, inspire other people around me to be able to do the same.
Awesome.
And so I'm driven by the idea that I can't let fear hold me back. I can't stop going because I don't want to do something. I really need to take action on my goals and achieve as much as I can, because I know in doing that, I'll be able to impact the lives of other people. I'll be able to inspire other people. And that's what fuels me. And there are certainly, plenty of times where fear or other things have held me back. I've got plenty of strengths and weaknesses, and I'm always trying to figure those out. But my biggest fear, so when I love the topic of fear, and I know you do as well. There are the little fears that hold us back from doing things here and there. My biggest fear is that I'll get to the end of my life and think that I didn't put it all in, right? I didn't go after it completely, that I didn't take chances or try to do the things that I wanted to do, or that I left things on the table. I heard a definition a couple years ago. I first heard this from a guy named Dominic Cortuccio, who's been on my podcast a couple times, who said the definition of hell is reaching the end of your life and meeting the person that you could have been. Mm-hmm. And that fear, and I don't want to say that I'm completely driven by fear, because I think I'm more driven by love and joy, right, and excitement for life. But that's the fear that drives me. I don't want to leave anything on the table. So I want to do as much as I can. And then I continue to share a lot of that because I want to be able to inspire other people, because I know, like you with starting this podcast, that there are hundreds, if not thousands or millions of people like me, or like I was a few years ago, mm-hmm, trying to figure that out. And if I can help some of them or many of them, then that really fulfills me. So I'm excited about that purpose and that mission. Mm-hmm. And that's what's driving me to do more and more, and help me overcome the shorter term fears of, oh, what if I put this out there and people don't like it, right? Which is the fear that holds a lot of people back from putting content out there.
Yeah. No, I love it. We're brothers from another mother in terms of this, right? And
sure.
And I want to touch on that piece of, what you're saying. I don't want to be communicating that I'm being driven or living by fear, but what I heard, and maybe this is coming from my own stuff, that once you kind of realize really what you are capable of, and you realize the potential that you have to impact other people, it's more about responsibility then, right? And obligation. And again, from a healthy place, right? And that there's just no choice, that once you realize this, you have to Take action on it. You have to get it out there, and you can't stop. Right. And that's in, and you know, that some people that are hear that from people like us, cause I think we're probably wired the same way. Mm-hmm. Their concern is, and maybe they tell me this, I don't know what kind of messaging you get from the people in your sphere, but they tell you to slow down. They tell you to, you know, take it easy.
Yeah.
They tell you to, man, you're going to hurt yourself. And so what are your thoughts on that?
Well, a lot of times I think the people that tell you to slow down or take it easy probably have your best intentions in mind. But a lot of times they may just want to hold you back because they don't want you to leave them behind. Right. Or to separate from the norm in society. I remember I used to, you know, I'd post a lot about working out all the time and people would send me messages like, you should probably take it easy. You know, I'm afraid of you getting hurt. And I'm like, look, I know what I'm doing. I'm not like crushing myself every day. I change it up. I do yoga, all this different stuff. But I think, you know, part of that is people going, whoa, I don't want to do that. So I don't want to see this person doing that. Which goes to one of the challenges we have in society of people, you know, comparing themselves too much. But to go back to your question about, you know, that obligation to put it out there, I don't even think I think about that enough, but you're right. I've heard that from other people. I've coached other people on that. If you have a gift, if you have a strength, you have a way that you can help and inspire other people, and you don't put it out there because you're afraid of someone else judging you or criticizing you, you're doing those other people a disservice. I mean, you're really being selfish because you are choosing your ego over the ability to help other people. And if you are someone who has been inspired or helped by other people, whether it's a Tony Robbins or a Hal Elrod or some other really inspiring figure out there, just imagine what your life would be like if they did not ever put themselves out there. They decided that, oh no, you know what? I'm not going to do this because I'm afraid, right? Maybe you had a manager or someone, a mentor along the way who helped you. If they decided, well, I'm not going to give them this advice because they might take it the wrong way, or, you know, they might be offended by it, or I'm scared of what they might say. And then you never got it. Your life would be completely different. Mm-hmm. So my life has been so inspired by so many people that have put great things out there, like Tony Robbins, Hal Elrod, Larry Hagner, Vincent Puglisi is a good friend of mine, a mentor of mine for many years. You know, even my own parents, I mean, many people, right? And if all of them didn't do the things that they did, my life would be worse. So that drives me as well. Like, I need to get this stuff out there to share because I have the power to inspire other people. And that's how I'm thinking about my book. And that is actually what's helping me overcome the fear that would naturally be there of, oh, what if I publish this book and everybody's like, well, this sucks, right? Like, it gets panned or rejected. There will be critics, but I know that in sharing what's in my heart, what's in my mind, I have the potential to inspire a lot of people, just like Hal did with me when I discovered his book. I have the potential to be that for other people. And I mean, to your point, it's because I have that in me, it's almost my obligation to put that out there. If I don't, then I'm being selfish. I'm doing a disservice to others.
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on that piece that, I'm convicted of as well, that, you know, sometimes one of my mentors, Richard Brook, and hopefully I can land him on this show, but he teaches the difference between humility and modesty. And, you know, for some people, when some people come to me and they have this great idea, right? And they'll say, yeah, I got this great idea. I want to do this. I want to do this podcast, have this website. I want to do this online teaching platform. And then they'll say, and I don't care if I make any money. Right, because that's their attempt at trying to be modest.
Yep.
Right, and that's their own hookup around what money is and the utility of it. But this isn't necessarily for you, right? This gift that you've been given, that we've been giving, that I believe everybody's been given. You know, once you fully understand it, embrace it, develop it, fine tune it, it's not just for you. It's for all the people that you are connected to right now and will be connected to as your momentum builds. That's who it's for. And if you happen to make money along the way, that's not a bad thing, right? That's not a negative thing. And in fact, that'll help you be able to reach even more people around that. Yeah. And so that So modesty says, oh, it was nothing. It's right. just something that I stumbled across, something that's kind of fell my way. And I'm glad that you like it, you know?
Yeah.
But humility is, yeah, I can't believe how I got here either. And yep. it took this person telling it to me 15 times. And then finally this other person that said it in a different way. And it finally made sense to me. And man, I didn't know how to write a sentence in a word processor, but I wrote a book. Right. And you help people map onto the process and the struggle that it took to get to where you're at. That's humility. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what speaks to people. And that's what inspires people. But society will try to convince us that modesty is what you're supposed to do. Right.
Right. Yeah. Don't brag. You can come across as arrogant. I've been trying to toe that line for a few years now. Mm-hmm. And I find that, you know, so many times I think about sharing things and that's the thing that holds me back sometimes is, well, will people think I'm arrogant? Am I bragging too much? Mm-hmm. And yet almost every time when I do hit go or send or submit or whatever, I put something out there, then someone tells me that, oh, I really appreciate you posting that. It inspired me to do X, right? Because if you don't share it, then nobody will ever see it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it was before we started recording, you mentioned, you saw my post about doing a bunch of pushups, during COVID,
right.
You know, the quarantine. And, I started doing a bunch of pushups because I was in an accountability group with some people in a group that, you know, one guy, set up a spreadsheet and I saw everybody on there. I was like, all right, I'll do more pushups. And then a friend of mine from a long time ago reached out on Facebook and challenged me to do more, who could do the most pushups in a day. And I ended up doing 1,000 pushups. And
wow.
So which was all, because when we first started, I was like, I did 500. I was like, that's amazing. But then I did 1,000 and you could look at that and you could do a Google search and see that I think the world record of the day is like 30,000 or something like that. So yeah. it's like, oh, well, that's really not that many in the grand scheme of things, even though it's probably more than, I don't know, 90% of the population could do or would do. But so is it bragging too much if I put that out there because other people could do it? But then when I post it, I've had multiple people message me or tell me that they've been doing more pushups and working out recently because they saw my post.
Right.
It's like, I'm changing people's lives just by doing a Facebook post about how many pushups. And so that's where and the fitness thing is one of the areas where I've learned the lessons and the delineations, because I am big into health and fitness. I'm not a trainer. It's not part of my business, but I post stuff to try to inspire other people.
Sure.
And there are the haters out there who will like make fun of me for posting so many gym posts or whatever. And I have to kind of ignore that because, like you said, it's not for them. But then there are many people who have told me that I have inspired them to work out more just because I'm sharing that. A friend of mine who was a client many years ago over in Europe sent me a message and said he lost 20 pounds because he started working out more just because of my posts.
Right.
And I mean, that made me feel so good, right? That's what we do it for.
Right.
And you know, when you have the mission that you want to help people, inspire people, you got to be willing to overcome the fear and the modesty, if you will. The other lesson I've learned about modesty too, is that for many years I was overly modest to the point where I could not even accept a compliment.
Sure.
Right? Someone says like, oh, wow, you know, it's really awesome, all the stuff you did. And, you know, to your point, you're like, well, I just got lucky or whatever. And what I've learned, or the way I've trained my mind on it, is that it's actually rude to mm-hmm. not accept somebody's compliment, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you pay someone a compliment, you want them to accept it because you're doing something nice. Like Nick, you and I are on Zoom right now looking at you and you've got this really cool graphic and background that you created that is way cooler than anything I have. And I complimented you on that. If you were like, oh, I don't know anything, you know, I don't know anything about that. Like, own it. Like you took the time or the money or whatever to have that made. And you got this cool thing. You set up a podcast. You've done a lot of really cool things. And when you own that, you also get to know your strengths more and what you're able to share with the world. Because, you know, we were also talking about self-awareness and strengths and weaknesses, knowing what you can do to help other people. And some of that is from self-discovery, but quite honestly, you know, a lot of times we don't know our own strengths, or we assume that if we are good at something, then everyone else is good at it too, mm-hmm. right? So, which is simply not the case. So that's why we have to listen to the compliments. And if multiple people are complimenting you on something, for instance, I've been hosting a podcast for 3 years. Many of my guests say to me, wow, you're a really great interviewer. Mm-hmm. And it's easy for me to just cast that aside. But when I started to really embrace that and say, you know what? One of my strengths is being curious, asking questions, getting to know people, interviewing people. I was able to lean into that more and use that in my life, in my business, that sort of thing. So I think we need to listen to the compliments we're getting too, because that tells us the strengths we have. And if you are someone who's in a person of influence, you happen to be a manager or a leader in a company, tell other people what their strengths are. Let them know, because they often don't know, right? They may be really detail oriented and good at getting things done and spreadsheets, whatever. I'm just making up examples. And they just think if they can do that, anybody can do it.
Sure.
And you're like, no, you doing this? Like, I just hired an assistant a couple months ago. She's fantastic with not only detail oriented work, but also kind of like the marketing back end of things that we're building. All that stuff scares the crap out of me, like creating marketing funnels and an email list and lead magnets and all that stuff. And she's making it so much easier for me. So I try to tell her as much as I can, like, you have such a strength in this. You are actually empowering me to go do the things that I'm good at. And I really appreciate that. And I don't think we compliment each other, you know, other people or tell them about their strengths enough. I probably still don't even do it enough. But once I made that switch and I learned that, I figured that out, I've tried to embrace and learn from comments, compliments more, and also give those more as well. And I find that that helps me accomplish more and also make more friends.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of gold there, Andy, in that last little piece that you shared. One of the things, just for folks that may be listening to this show, and maybe they do have an idea, they're trying to get off the ground, maybe they are a fledgling entrepreneur, at some point you have to involve a team. You've got to build a team. You can't be a one person show. And I, you know, just for me in this podcast, I actually have somebody that's out of the country internationally that does the mixing and producing for this, because I know how to do it. I forced myself to do it, to learn. I actually locked myself in my office for a 3-day weekend and went through, I don't know how many hours of tutorials about how to use the software that I'm using. Yep. But in order to keep it up, there's just no way. It took me 3 to 4 hours per episode to get it where I wanted it. And so I had to kind of step back and look, if I'm going to keep doing this, I've got to find help. And that was tough for me anyway, to kind of admit that and the cost involved, but my goodness, the amount of pressure that reduces. I just dropped that sucker in a Google folder, Google Drive folder, and the next day it comes ready to go. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know? Amazing. And so know that that's part of the process, that there is only so much that you can do. Even with the best talent, idea, whatever it is, you're going to have to add to your team. So I appreciate you telling your part about hiring an assistant and how they take care of all of the online business marketing stuff. And if that's not your thing, just be humble. There's a reason to be humble, right? And bring somebody on that can do that for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And know what you're good at and what you're not good at. Right. I am not a detail-oriented person. I'm not organized.
Yeah.
I have missed promotions and jobs in the past because I was not a good project manager, not detail-oriented, but I've learned what my strengths are. Mm-hmm. And the more time I can spend doing the things that I love and that I'm really good at, the more successful I'm going to be. So if I can outsource, delegate, whatever, some of those things. And you're right, it's not easy. Not everybody's in a position financially to make those things happen. When I started my first podcast, I don't know, over 3 years ago, the first year I did all the editing and everything myself. And then I finally hired an editor in the Philippines, like to your point.
Yeah.
And I've had a production team ever since. And it's so freeing because I can focus on doing the interviews.
You're right. Do what you do best.
Right. Which I do best, and not all the editing, which, you know, I learned, right? I'm proud that I learned it. I can still mix it. If I happen to record a quick solo episode and I want to throw it up quickly, I can do it myself. It's not a big deal.
Right.
Just like I can organize my calendar and I can send meeting invitations and things like that.
Yeah.
But the more I have a detail-oriented team member who can help me with that stuff, the more I can spend time on doing the things that I'm much better at.
Right. Good lessons learned for folks that are just starting out. And, you know, I consider Andy several steps ahead of me, but I'm definitely down my road and, you know, have lots of steps under my belt too. So just hope that encourages people that it might look scary at first and you may be tempted to do it all on your own, but eventually you're going to have to build your team and be confident in doing so.
Definitely.
So I want to zero in on career. Given that that's a big theme of your book, right, and your own personal experience, and likewise, before jumping on the call, kind of what you saw as a young man growing up in terms of what the people around you did with their careers, and are you familiar with the website? What is it called? 80,000 hours?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay, well there's your nugget from this episode. You need to get on 80,000 hours, and it's kind of like a conglomeration resource site, but 80,000 hours represents what the typical person will invest in terms of hours of their life in a career, right? In the context of you're on this planet for a finite time.
Yeah.
And so that's why I tell my direct reports and the people that look for me for guidance, like, look, if you're going to make this your career, you need to recognize that you're going to spend on average 80,000 hours, or maybe it's 800,000. I'm off on that, but this significant chunk of time of the life that you've been granted and blessed with, you're going to dedicate to this organization or this field or this discipline. Man, that's actually a gift. And are you sure? Are you certain that this is how you want to spend that chunk of time? Because you could spend that time in a bazillion other ways. Is this really what you want to do? And do you have a vision for that in terms of how it will be fulfilling for your life? And if it's just a daily grind that you do because it happens to bring you some income that at one point in time, I'm telling my own experience, right? At one point in time, it pays the bills, but as you don't improve, you don't upgrade other areas of your life, sooner than later, that paycheck will not cover the needs of your life. And then you have to start working overtime. Then you have to start taking a second job on. And then you're still keeping up with the Joneses, right? So you stack on, you're shaking your head. You know this black hole that it can be. Then all of a sudden this job doesn't feel like a career. Mm-hmm. And you're wondering, am I really going to be able to make it 80,000 hours? And then all the other stuff sets in, the despair, the depression, the what's it all about. And anyway, so what does career mean to you, and kind of what are your thoughts on that in terms of people thinking about career and thinking about, you know, you're going to, I mean, if that number is true, you're going to spend more time at your work or at your job than with the people that you say that you value the most. Right. And that's kind of a weird dichotomy to balance. So I'll shut up. I'll turn it over to you.
No, you're right. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are consciously or unconsciously aware of that. If you have a job or a business, no matter what it is, most of us have a need to work throughout the week. Right. And most of us are working at least 40 hours a week, at least in the United States. And that means that you're probably away from your children, spouse, friends, whatever, for a good amount of time throughout the week. And, you know, you may or may not enjoy what you're doing, but you only get one life. You know, it's a very basic concept. You can see that stuff everywhere. You know, YOLO, you only live once, but you only get one life. You might get multiple careers, right? You know, you look at the average tenure, you know, someone coming out of college today, Gen Z, they're probably going to have 5 to 7 different careers, which is totally cool. Maybe 20 different jobs, which is fine. Like, people move around more. And I think that means that, as I've studied it and talked to different people, that they're trying to figure things out and find something that they really enjoy. I think people put more weight and stock on having a career that is fulfilling for them, more so than maybe anybody did in the past. In the past, sort of like, this is what I was ordained to do, whether my parents told me or it's just what I got my degree in, and that's where I needed to go and that's where I needed to stay there. Or, you know, Nick, I know you've worked in government institutions that have pensions. In the old days, corporations had those too, and so people felt locked in by that. You know, there's a lot more freedom and flexibility. I think that is a great thing because it allows people the freedom to move around. The downside to that I think is that people don't spend enough time thinking about what it is they truly want to do. And so when they get to a point where they're unhappy, they just hop to the next thing, right? So many people are drifting. They're in reaction mode. They end up in, and this is true for me too, right? I'm not above anybody else. Right. We end up in jobs because our parents told us that's what we should do, or an uncle said that's what you should do, or we just randomly picked a major in college and then went, well, we spent 4 years on that and might as well try to go get a job in that. Or you're in a job because that's the only only person that would hire you at a point where you needed it. I've been in that position. I've been in all those positions, by the way. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. This is not about changing the past. It's not about being, you know, feeling guilty about decisions you made in the past or anything like that. It's about waking up right now and thinking about, okay, how am I spending my time right now? Am I enjoying that? Is it fulfilling? Is it what I truly want to do? Is it contributing towards the vision or goal that I have for myself in the future? Do I even have a vision or a goal? So part of what I wrote in my book is the importance of having some type of a vision, some type of idea of where you want to go in your career. And it might be that you're already on the right track. You know, you're a manager of operations in a company, and one day you want to be vice president or even chief operating officer. Totally cool. It might be that you want to change careers to a different type of job. Maybe you work in finance, but you love people and you'd actually rather be in HR. That's cool too. Or maybe it is that you find that you're just really, you're tired of the corporate life and you want to run your own business. That's great as well. All those things are great. There's nothing wrong with any of those. There's nothing wrong with being an employee, staying, you know, in a corporate world. There's nothing wrong with running your own business. That's exciting. That's what I love. I think the key is to have an idea of where you want to go and then start to be intentional about how and where you're spending your time, having a plan of action for how you want to get there. So for the person that is working in finance, who says, you know, I got into finance because, you know, my dad told me I need to get into finance. It's really secure, but it's really boring as hell. I'd rather work in HR or get into marketing. That seems exciting. So make a plan for how are you going to do that, right? That might mean sacrifices. It might mean that you stop going to happy hour during the week. Instead, you spend 2 hours after work studying marketing or taking a course, a class at a college or an online course, or getting some type of certification. It might mean that you spend extra time and money networking with people in marketing in your company, outside of your company, to find out what they're doing and learn as much as you can. The three big things that I think can help people set them up for future career success are continuous learning. So what is it that you want to do in the future? How much can you learn about that? So when I was working in a consulting company, after I discovered the Miracle Morning and I went on, started on this mission, this sort of journey, I decided that I really wanted to become an entrepreneur. I wanted to get back into that. I had been involved in some startups very early in my career after college. And no one in my family is an entrepreneur, by the way. My parents are both teachers. My mom and my stepmom are high school principals. I don't think there's an entrepreneur in my family, other than my uncle, my favorite uncle, who has done a lot of different things over the years. And so I never had exposure to that as a kid, but I woke up to it after college. I stumbled upon the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, by Robert Kiyosaki. And that kind of opened my eyes to that kind of world. And I tried some stuff after college that all failed, both the companies I started, and I went to work for some startups, and all of the bosses that I worked for were complete jerks. And so I had to leave those, right? And I got into the corporate world. It was great. It was fine. But I wanted to get back towards entrepreneurship. So what did I do? I started reading books about it. I started my first podcast, which was called The Entrepreneur Hot Seat, which I just used to interview successful entrepreneurs and talk to them and learn about their journey. Whew, man, is that a great way to learn from people that have done things well, right? Started educating myself. So invest in learning, continuous learning, whether you are trying to change careers, be successful, get a promotion in the future, or just prepare for the future of work. I think it's so important to always be learning and educating ourselves because the world is changing so fast, right? Jobs are changing. You know, there are many jobs right now that did not exist 10 years ago, right? Think about every company has not only a social media manager, some big companies have teams of people that manage social media, and those jobs didn't exist 10 years from now or 10 years ago. And 10 years from now, your job might not exist, right? There may be tons of jobs that are in existence 10 years now that don't exist today. So how do you prepare for those? You continually educate yourself about what's going on in your space or the space you want to get to. And number two is you build your network. You keep networking with people in the place where you want to get to, in your company, in the place where you want to be successful. So because I wanted to be successful in the world of entrepreneurship, I go to conferences, I network with a lot of entrepreneurs. I learn from them about things like podcasting and marketing funnels and all this stuff. You can learn it just from listening to podcasts. But I also connect with people who are doing stuff so I can be inspired by them. And then the third thing, in addition to learning and networking to set yourself up for career success, is building a personal brand, building a professional and personal brand. And a brand is really your reputation. So that might just mean how you approach things inside of your company, how you hold yourself in meetings, the projects you take on. But outside of your company, you can build that brand by networking with people, posting things on social media, starting a podcast, sharing articles, things like that, to build that brand of someone who is an expert who knows, you know, something about the topic that they're working in. That's going to help set yourself up for that future success as well. And I guess to tie it all together and bring it back to your question, for me, it's about ownership and intention. Just take responsibility and ownership for what you're doing and where you want to go. Don't be a victim. Don't wait for other people to tell you what to do, because quite frankly, and this is really important, nobody cares more about your career than you do. Nobody does. Your mom might care, your husband or wife might care, but they don't care as much as you. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be the one to take ownership, take responsibility, and take the action to find something that is fulfilling for you, or make that tweak that's going to make a job more fulfilling for you, or just learn more to be even better at the job that you already have that you enjoy, which is totally cool too.
Awesome. Again, dropping lots of gold there, Andy. And this is all going to be in your book?
Yeah, most of what I just talked about is awesome. In the book, Own Your Career, Own Your Life, in the section about preparing for your future.
That's awesome. And so I learned very similarly. I went to a series of personal development seminars through First Step Success and Creating a Dynasty. I don't know if you know that group, Danny Johnson and Hans Johnson. And they teach that if you're not happy, which I think that's the key, right?
Yep.
And hopefully we can talk about that too. But if you're not happy with your compensation in the here and now, and it doesn't matter what you're doing, like you were saying, you could be an employee, you could be in corporate leadership, you could be an entrepreneur, whatever it is. If you're not happy with your compensation, and then it comes down to three things, and you named two of them, and I'll probably crystallize a fourth one there based on what you said about branding, because I totally agree with that. But knowledge, skills, and ability, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the market pays for, always has, always will. And you can fight those things or you can accept them. Like you were saying, don't be a victim, right? So if you don't have the knowledge, and that's the reason why you're not getting customers the way that you want to, your product isn't quite there because you're not tapped into what you need to be in terms of knowledge base. You're getting passed over for promotions because when you do an interview or you produce a trial product for whatever it is, it's just not quite there. Well, look at the knowledge that you have and how do you boost your knowledge? Well, like you gave several examples, right? You can get certificates, you can take online courses, you can go to night school, listen to podcasts, read books. But I'm a believer that virtually anything that you need to learn knowledge-wise is already available to you at your fingertips via the internet.
100%. 2020, right? There's no excuse. Right. That the whole world of information is available on our fingertips. Yeah. There's nothing holding you back.
We have Ivy League schools like Harvard and MIT that are offering free courses. At one point in time, Harvard was offering a free online MBA, right? Mm-hmm. But you got to put in the work. You got, you know, and I think that model, I mean, I think higher education as a commodity is imploding as we speak, right? So you talk about college professors, right? What's going to happen to your job 10 years from now? You know, it's going to look drastically different, right? So the knowledge is out there. You just have to be willing to dig into it and find it. So that's definitely a piece. And skills, right? And so you may have the knowledge, but you may not have the skills honed and crafted to be able to execute your knowledge, right? And so that's like when you were talking about doing your podcast with the entrepreneurs, I mean, you're listening and you're learning and you're probably trying things out and maybe following up with those people to say, hey, I was really interested about this. That's building your connections, right? And your network. Knowledge, skills, and connections. Sorry. I said abilities, but I meant that's KSAs.
Connections are huge, right?
Yeah. Connections are huge. And I personally really railed against the connections piece. I was that employee who felt like you should just hire me because of who I am and in the work that I do. And just because I don't have name recognition with this entity and this group of people. And I used to get resentful about that. When Obama said, hey, you didn't build that, I was one of those guys that was like, F you, yes, I did, type of a deal. But then I had to kind of step back and realize, yeah, you really don't get anywhere without the help of other people. And for me, that was a humbling thing. I had to kind of, you know, step back from that, learn from that, and grow from it, and start, you know, what Guru Speak is, one of the books that I want to write, you know. So one of the pieces of Guru Speak is, your network is your net worth.
100%.
Right. But then they move on and talk to a different topic, right? But what does that really mean? How do you break that down? And it's extending yourself. It's making, you know, my wife and I will get invited to functions that 3 or 4 years ago, we would have been like hard pass. Like, we're not doing that. You know what I mean? That's stupid. Versus now it's like, oh, this is an opportunity to get connected to a group of people that we would, you know, never get connected to without saying yes to some of these things. And maybe it's outside your comfort zone and stretches you a little bit. So, and then that brand piece, I think, is something that's definitely guru speak, meaning you get in front of, you know, where it's together, Gary V or you or people listening to this podcast, you're going to hear, you got to establish your personal brand. And people think personal brand is this, right?
Right. Your logo.
Your logo. But right. You said it right. It's what can people expect from you just by nature of you showing up. And I like that definition. So
it's your reputation. It's what people think of you. And as you're talking, I'm thinking about how you can actually tie that into what you shared about knowledge, skills, and network. And first of all, network is, I built my entire career on networking. Every job and business opportunity I've ever gotten has been because of connections, introductions from people. There have been over 20 different jobs and business opportunities. I can only think of one where I applied online and got the job, right? Everything else has been, you should hire this guy. And then they did, right? Because of the network. And that's how most of the world of business works. And tied into that, you know, to tie in the personal brand part, you said people get hired and get jobs and opportunities because of knowledge, skills, and network. For knowledge and skills, I would add the word perceived, perceived knowledge and skills, because most of the time, there might be a small percentage of jobs out there where they ask for your SAT score or your GMAT score or something like that. Most of the time, they don't know what your actual knowledge is.
Yeah.
They're going on perceived knowledge, which comes from what, you know, things they see on social media, what you talk about in an interview, how you hold yourself. Well, he seems like he really knows what he's talking about. Let's give him a shot, right? Your reputation, because other people talk about you as being an expert. I guarantee you that anything I talk about today, I don't know. I'm not the foremost expert on, but because I'm here talking about it and some other people are not, I may be perceived as the expert, right? Because I'm out there talking about it.
Yeah.
So perception is a big thing. And I always say perception is reality too.
Right.
It doesn't matter what you believe about yourself. It's what other people believe about you that matters. Sorry, because that's the perception out there in the marketplace. So you can either, go about life and try to pretend that's not a thing and just, you know, ignore the brand, or you can be more intentional about it.
Absolutely. When I'm working with, because this is a conversation I have quite a bit with young people in their career in state government, trying to figure out how do I navigate this system and how do I land promotions. And, you know, two things that I tell them consistently, and they don't often, you know, follow through on it, but, is it's the worst case scenario when you show up for an interview and this is the first time that the people have ever seen you or know who you are. right? If your first foray into it is your resume and whatever you choose to show up in terms of your address there, that's the worst case scenario. And so how do you work against that? Well, if you know that you're going to do the interview ahead of time, can you get their emails and just send them, you know, like, hey, I'm looking forward to this interview. Thanks for the opportunity. Shoot a video of yourself and put it in there, right, in the email. And there might be some people who's like, oh, but that's just brown nosing. I'm just telling you that, you know, in our world, there is an opportunity. You might be able to go to your boss and say, hey, can I use some work time to go shadow somebody in that office? You know, so that's a way to kind of get there. But you've got to have, and then the second thing is, I know how many times I'll debrief an interview with somebody and I'll say, well, who was on the panel? And they'll say, well, I don't know. I'm just like, oh. Like you don't know, like you don't know who it was or, you know, what their names are. No, I don't know. And I've even coached people going into the interview, take a pad of paper and a pen and write down the people on the panel. And the reason for this is I want you to follow up with them, right? Because it's a grind. I don't know what your experience is being on interview panels, Andy, but you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, when I see interviews, I'm like, it's going to be all day. And it's and to know their names, figure out how to follow up with them and just let them know, hey, thanks for taking time out of your day to interview me. And here's the things, here's how I was challenged by the questions. So I appreciate, you know, whatever that is, be genuine, right? Don't be phony about it. And I'll debrief with people and said, who was on the panel? I don't know. And I'm just like, right.
Get those names, follow up. You're in sales, you're selling yourself, whether right. You work in sales or not, right? You got to show you. And I've made all those mistakes. I didn't know what I was doing for most of the time, right? We figured this stuff out.
Right.
By the way, one time I've been really big into networking since, I don't know, 2005. And when I was in business school, I did my MBA at USC, Marshall School of Business. When I was in business school, I was applying for some different manager development programs. And one time it actually backfired on me, but I'm still proud of it because I was interviewing for this this leadership rotation program at GE, and they were on campus. And there were a bunch of representatives that were going to be interviewing people. I reached out to all of them ahead of time and scheduled, like, you know, coffee chats or whatever, and like got to know people. And I thought it was great. And then the organizer came to me later and said, we just felt like you were a little bit too aggressive in reaching out to everybody. And they didn't invite me to the next round. And I was like, what are you like? That's rewarded everywhere else. So it was just a one time that didn't work out well. But like I said, I'm proud of that,
right.
That failure. Because every other time it's worked out really well for me, mm-hmm. networking, just reaching out to people, having conversations, it opens up opportunities, right? When they become aware of you, maybe you follow up on that interview and maybe you still don't get the job, but they keep you in mind for something else.
Absolutely. Right?
Like, oh, I really like how Nick reached back out and asked for feedback or shared his takeaways. Another time I was interviewing for a leadership development program. And I did poorly in the first interview and I got rejected and I reached out to the guy and I asked him for feedback. We got on a call and he gave me feedback and we started chatting and he was like, oh, you know, I'm really impressed with what you're talking about. Why don't you fly up to San Francisco for the second round interview? And I actually talked my way into the second interview.
Nice.
Just by asking for feedback and getting on the call and having a conversation. But there is no chance to have that until you are willing to have the conversation to try to get it.
Love that. I love those stories. I worked, I went through the book Way of the Seal, well, at least the workbook that accompanies it. I don't know if you've seen it with Mark Divine, with one team of mine that at work, and they're kind of the special ops of the staff, you know, so to speak. And so, but Mark Divine in the book, talks about really in an interview, you have one goal and one goal only. And that is to communicate that you're a trustworthy person to the people on the panel. Can they trust you to be part of this team? Can they trust you to do the job? Can they trust you to learn and grow? Even if maybe your skill set isn't exactly what they're looking for, but can they trust you to learn and grow? And then the next 90 days should be an extension of the interview. That should be the, what we'll really see you, you know, what you're cut out of, right? Cause like you said, it's a lot of those decisions are based on the need to hire the position. And then the person who has the best perception of being able to do the role. And I really like that idea that, you know, ultimately That's hard feedback though, too, right? That when you don't get a job, and I'm telling people that I'm, you know, mentoring at work, you know, part of the reason why people say no is because they don't trust you. And it's not because you're not a trustworthy person, but they don't know enough of you to be trusted. So your thoughts on that in terms of what Mark says, and I've bought into it, that's one of the primary things that you should do in the course of an interview.
Yeah, I never heard of that before. I've heard of Mark Divine. I know he's a well-respected Navy SEAL veteran and all that stuff. Yeah, it totally makes sense. It's the same as sales, right? People are not going to buy from you, and buy in this case is hire you for a job unless they trust you. Mm-hmm. And when they're hiring you for a job, probably on their team, working with them, you got to think about the extension that comes from that. If I'm hiring someone new to be on my team, whether they're direct report, work with me, whatever, they have the potential to make my job and therefore my life easier or potentially more stressful. Because if I hire you and you do a terrible job, and now I'm cleaning up your mess, right, and then I'm spending nights trying to figure out, should I let them go? Right. Should I keep training them? Whatever it may be, that causes me a lot of stress. It makes my life worse. I'm taking that stress home. I'm taking it out on my spouse. Like, that could have a big impact on your life versus, wow, I hired this person, Nick. You know, I knew I could trust him, and he came in, he's delivered, he's been awesome in his job. It frees me up. It makes my job easier. Mm-hmm. I'm being more successful in my role. The company's being more successful. Everybody's happier. You know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that's the potential that you have when you join a team. You're impacting other people's lives. You're impacting the business. And so, you know, to your point, never really thought about it that way, but you want to show them that, hey, you can trust me to come in and either do this job really well, or at least give it my all, mm-hmm, and try to figure it out. And, you know, we all know sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Right.
I've been in jobs where I gave it my all and I just was not a good fit.
Yeah.
Right. And so we had to decide mutually to move on, but you want to build that trust and that credibility with them.
Sure.
In whatever way you need to do that.
Yeah. And that's, you know, Mark's point to cap that off in the book. And of course he's learning this from his experience, you know, bringing people onto a SEAL team as a commanding officer. Mm-hmm. And just because you have the skill and you've shown that physically and mentally you can make it through the training, that doesn't mean that you can be a trusted team member, right? And so that was a kind of the big reality there. And so I think his tagline for this is hire for character over skill.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, because people can learn skills. Character is harder to change.
Right. Right.
Someone with integrity and energy and enthusiasm, right, is excited to come to work. Maybe they don't quite have the skills you want, but you can probably train them. I would definitely much rather have that. I don't get these job descriptions always like must have 10 years of experience doing XYZ. Just give me somebody who's really excited to learn and give them a little bit of time to figure it out. But that's me. I have not had the experience of hiring a lot of people.
Yeah.
I work more with organizations on the talent development, the training side. Yeah. Once they're in, you know, how do you develop them, engage, sure, them, yeah, that sort of thing.
And again, I'm not here to coach you or to tell you what to do, but I know on my end of it, you know, having good hiring decisions saves everybody tremendous, like you were talking about, you know, time, money, effort. And when we come to a place where somebody, this isn't working out, we're actually motivated as leadership to do everything we can to make it work out, because just in the process of hiring and initial training and onboarding, it's probably no less than, in state government, it's probably no less than $30,000-$40,000 just right there, just to hire and bring somebody on. And, you know, trying to be good stewards of taxpayers' dollars, you know, we're obligated to make the most of it, right? And so, you know, my thought for you is, even though you're not involved in hiring, getting the people who are involved in hiring better at that process for themselves can pay off huge in the long run, for sure.
100%. And help people get better at getting hired, right?
Right.
Which, yeah, is, like you said, show up with energy and enthusiasm, build that trust, know that that's what it's all about. And if they don't hire you, find out why.
Yep.
Learn from that experience. I talked about taking ownership earlier. I'm really big on that. Get out of the victim mindset. Mm-hmm. Oh, they just didn't see it. Mm-hmm. Well, why? Why didn't they see it?
Sure.
Why didn't they decide? What can you learn from that? And how, mm-hmm, can you improve everything in life? you know, failures, mistakes, whatever, especially, are all learning opportunities. Right. So how can you learn from that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another concept that I have, and I love bouncing this off of you because you've done your own work and you're a deep well in terms of this, you know, with the book Own Your Career, Own Your Life. And I want to bridge the own your career part, because I think that that's what we've been talking about. And then how does that, you know, parlay into owning your life? And, you know, there's a young man that did a pretty famous TED talk, you know, over a million hits, and you're talking about Generation Z. And he's like 10 years old. I forgot his name, but I'll make sure to put it in the show notes. But he basically, his TED talk is, you know, people, adults like you ask kids like me who are 10 years old, what do you want to do with the rest of your life? And it's right. A silly question. I just want to be happy.
Yeah.
And so my answer to that, what do I want to do with the rest of my life, is be happy. And why have you adults, you know, forgotten about that? And basically kind of shame on you adults for trying to talk me out of that. Right. And so I loved hearing that. And so for people that kind of do settle and accept kind of where they're at in their career, maybe they've been passed over for promotions, or maybe they've already told themselves a story that, oh, somebody else is going to get that. So why even bother? Or I'm not what they're looking for. All those things that people kind of, and myself included, will tell themselves, the story that they tell themselves that then becomes their reality. But they'll say, oh, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm happy. Yeah. Right. But if you were to track their daily conversation and their daily routine, more times than not, you're going to see somebody who really isn't happy, but they've convinced themselves to at least to a certain degree, you know, outwardly project that they're happy, but they're really not. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, I love working with employees who say that they're fine, they're good. And then they'll get super frustrated over somebody ordered the wrong size paper clips. You know what I mean? It's like, what the hell? And I'm like, whoa, I thought you were happy with this job and this, you know what I mean? And, but that piece of, is for, in your perspective, owning your career, owning your life, is being content, is having true joy, is being happy a goal, or is it the goal? What's your take on that?
I think it's the core tenet of that. I think owning your career and owning your life means that you are satisfied and fulfilled with what you're doing. And that the measure of that is only your perception. It's only how you feel about it. It doesn't matter what other people think. It doesn't matter that your brother or sister is president of a company or climbing the corporate ladder. If that's not for you, then don't do it. Don't stress about it, right? Mm-hmm. You're happy doing that job, the middle level job, whatever, and getting out at 5 o'clock and spending time with your family. You get to decide where you want to be, but you've also got to be really honest with yourself about what you truly want and what will make you happy, what you aspire to do. And, you know, you talk about people saying, oh, I'm good with this, but they're really not. So many people in society, they're drifting, they're doing things because society tells us that's what we should be doing. We should be trying to climb the corporate ladder, or we should be going to this job. We should be watching sports and reality TV and Netflix all the time. We should be, you know, doing stuff that, whatever, waste our time going to happy hour. There's nothing wrong with any of these things, but they are things that take time that don't actually, a lot of them don't really contribute that much to your life and your happiness. And I think I just want people to wake up and be honest about what you're doing, how you're spending your time. Is that serving you? Is that fulfilling you? Is it contributing, you know, towards your goal? You might be in a job that you hate, but you see it as honestly as a stepping stone towards something that you want to get to. Which is totally cool. Like, that's fine. Be honest about, I'm making a sacrifice right now so that I can get to something else later, which is fine. But if you're in a job you hate and you're just saying, well, it's fine, you know, I just need to do this for the money, and then I just want to get to the weekend. That's not okay. Like, you either need to be more honest with yourself and look to make some changes, or just start to accept the things that are going on in your life and focus on the things that are in your control. Find fulfillment in other areas, and maybe you don't need to worry. Maybe the career is okay enough. Not everybody has to go and change their job. I just want people to be honest with themselves. Stop lying to themselves. Stop lying to others. One of the biggest things that people say all the time is, oh, I'd like to do X. I'd like to work out more, or I'd like to study more, or you know, change jobs. I don't have time. I don't have time, right? People say that all the time. It's such a throwaway phrase that is just not true. Because you do have time to do anything that you want if you live in the United States or any other democratic country where you are actually free to do what you want with your time, so long as you're not breaking laws, right? You have freedom. No one's forcing you to go to that job that you have or run that business that you have. You decided to do that. You choose to do that. So when you own that decision, you embrace that decision and then say, okay, I want to do these other things. Is it a priority or not? Because you choose whether you go to the gym or not. You choose whether you start studying marketing in your off time on the evenings or weekends. You choose whether you go to happy hour instead. I'm not knocking happy hour. I've been to thousands of happy hours. I'm a very social person. Right. But that is, I hold that up as an example because it's one of the things that can easily distract, right?
Sure.
When you're like, oh, I have this goal. I want to get this next job and I'm going to study after work, but I got invited to happy hour, right? So I'm going to go to that instead. Mm-hmm. Just be honest about your priorities. Say, so the thing, when I tell people to be honest and just, and switch, flip the switch and say, instead of, oh, I didn't have time to work out or I didn't have time to study or take that extra class, it was really, I chose not to do that, right? I chose to work longer, or I chose to spend time with my family, which is cool. Or I chose to watch Netflix, which is totally fine too. But that's just recognize that everything you do is your choice.
Right.
And the more you are aware of that, I think is where we get into the area of you're living, you're owning your life and you're living life with intention because you're honest about what you're doing and the choices that you're making and you're living life on your terms. And if there's something you don't like, maybe you try to make some changes.
Sure.
And if you're happy with your life and it's not something that other people would choose, who cares, right? I, as an entrepreneur doing what I'm doing right now, make less money than my friends from business school who are in, still in the corporate world, but I would much rather be doing what I'm doing. I love what I do. I'd rather make less money and be happy than be like a CFO of a company making a ton of money and hate it, right? That's my choice. You get to choose for you what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that mindset, right? That's definitely a mindset. And part of that, you know, things that you need to own that you implied but didn't come right out and call it is that you need to own your schedule. You know, that if you're saying you don't have time for whatever it is, time for things that, you know, are ultimately going to pay off huge as long as you continue to take the small critical steps. You mentioned Tony Robbins several times. I have an appreciation for him. I'm 42, so I grew up with the infomercials, you know, of Tony Robbins. So I thought he was a big, big fat phony, and I'll save my story for what convinced me otherwise. But, you know, one of the things that he says is that we major in minor things in this life, right? Yeah. And it's choices and it's owning your schedule. And my mentor in network marketing uses the story of the compounding penny. And it's the idea that, you know, if you were to offer somebody, you know, July 1st is rolling around. If you offer somebody a penny that doubles every day for that month or $1,000, well, most people are going to take the $1,000. I don't know if you've heard this example before, Andy, or not, but if you were to take the penny and let it double every single day, by the end of the month, how much money do we have, Andy? Have you heard this one before?
I've heard it, and yeah. I know that it can be really big, but yeah. I don't know the actual number.
It's like something, you know, it's like 5-point-something million dollars.
Yeah.
Right. But on the front end of it, you think, well, what's that penny going to do for me? Right. Well, it's not, it's the penny today, and tomorrow it's 2 pennies, and the next day it's, you know, 4 pennies, and it's 8 pennies. Yeah. And, but that's equating to you're owning your schedule. Mm-hmm. If all you, and I do this all the time when I'm coaching people, well, I don't have time for that. Well, how much time do you have?
Yeah.
Well, I've got 5 minutes. I'm like, okay. Well, we're going to use that 5 minutes for all it's worth.
Yeah.
Right. But people won't believe that using 5 minutes intentionally every single day will amount to anything. And it will. And there's plenty of entrepreneurs that have that story that said, because I was working 2 jobs, I had kids, I was a single parent, and I only had 20 minutes a day or 5 minutes, whatever it is. There's hundreds of stories where somebody chose to look at the penny, which equated to whatever amount of time that they could scrape out of their schedule and leveraged it for all it's worth.
Yep. 100%. All those little actions, they add up. I mean, I think about where I've gotten to over the last 3 years, it's amazing to me. And it just all... it's an accumulation of small actions of networking, of reaching out to people, of trying different things, hiring coaches, investing, going to conferences, everything just contributes and adds up. It's like a snowball, and it keeps growing and growing. It's because I chose to spend time doing those things. You know, to your point, people major in minor things. A lot of people choose to spend all their time playing fantasy football or something else, which again, totally cool. I try not to ever judge anybody,
sure.
But just don't spend all your time doing that and then complain that you don't have time to work on your career goals or whatever right. it is.
And it's also the reality in today's electronic world and how the opportunity for connection is just blown up is say you are using all your time for fantasy football, you know, that's actually a marketable skill and potential program. I mean, there's a podcast that started out all over, you know, fantasy football, and they, you know, every year they release a fantasy football kit that can be consumed, and they're really good at it. Right.
And it's a big business, right? You can make a lot of money there. So if you can turn it into a business, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it could be something, it doesn't matter what it is. It's something that you think is a silly little hobby. Well, your ability to reach people that really like that silly little hobby is front and center. It's available. So
yeah,
don't take anything for granted. Anything that you've been investing time in, that could have a value point to it, it's probably worth looking at to a certain degree.
Yeah, just don't start that fantasy football business right now, because as we record this, I don't think we even know if there's going to be a
football season. Right, if there's going to be a season or not, right? Right, absolutely. So I'm looking forward to that book coming out. You know, Own Your Career, Own Your Life. Is there a timeline from when it might hit the Amazon or wherever it's going to be?
Yeah, I'm planning on publishing it in September. You know, just going through the process now, editing, reviewing. My wife is actually reviewing it right now and making it a lot better. She's a former journalist and a much better writer than I am.
Oh, nice.
I'm putting the steps in place, planning on publishing it. And I've got a place people can go if they want to get updates on that too.
Where is that place?
Well, in addition to that, I've got a free gift for you and your audience, Nick.
Awesome. I love that.
Related to what we're talking about, I've created a report of the top 5 most common career mistakes that people make.
Love it.
Top 5 mistakes that people make in their career. And it's not just from my mind. I went out and surveyed my network, put tons of responses together, and put them together in a very short report of the top 5 career mistakes. So you can get that by going to ownyourcareeronyourlife.com/mistakes. So ownyourcareeronyourlife.com/mistakes, and you can download that. It'll put you on my email list, and we'll get you updates on the book. And I'm actually going to be looking for some cool people to join my advanced reader team later this year when the book comes out and help me launch it as well. So Nick's raising his hand. I'll put you on that list.
Get you. No, that's super generous. I'm going to be signing up for that as soon as I press stop on this recording here. Appreciate you for that. So, coming towards the end of my show, I ask all of my guests, for the most part, sometimes I miss it because of other parts of the conversation, but how do you define mindset?
I think about your mindset as your perception of the world. So how do you perceive the world? How do you look at the events that are happening? And do you see things as, you know, this gets thrown out around a lot. Like, do you think that the world is happening to you? Things are happening to you all the time, or are they happening for you? Mm-hmm. And it's a big switch to make. And it's hard to make if you're in a challenging situation, mm-hmm. right? But I like to operate with the mindset, with the perception that everything in life is an opportunity. Everything's happening to me, or everything's happening for me, excuse me. All challenges create opportunities. And there are some things that are much harder than others. But just for example, like I look at the last 3 months under COVID-19, quarantine, all that stuff. It was very challenging for my business. It cost me a lot of money because at the time my main business was flying around the country running in-person training, and all that got postponed.
Yeah.
But every day I told myself, this is an opportunity. Mm-hmm. This is actually something that I'm going to look back on my life and be grateful for what it did. And truly, it allowed me to stay home more with my family. You know, I used to travel a lot, and I've been home the last 3 months every night with my kids. I've pivoted my business. I've launched a lot of online stuff, virtual training, so that I really don't have to travel again if I don't want to.
Nice.
And so
wow.
I like to see everything in life as an opportunity. And to me, that is all about mindset. It's all about how you perceive life. And I know there will be really challenging things. You know, people get sick, people die, like all kinds of bad things that it's really hard to see it that way. But for those everyday challenges that come up, you know, when your coworker orders the wrong size paper clips, see that as an opportunity to have a conversation about ordering the right paper clips and to check yourself and ask yourself, do I really care about these paper clips, or is there something else that's bothering me?
Right.
Maybe I need to do something about that. Right. So take ownership, take responsibility. Mindset is all about how you perceive life, and you get to choose how you perceive life. Nobody else gets to choose that for you. Only you.
Love it. So the takeaway from there, Andy, tee it up for us. So there are a lot of people, right? And there's inevitably people are going to be listening to this show, listening to our conversation, who up to this point really do have the belief that life is happening to them.
Yeah.
Right?
Most people do.
So how does somebody, like when they press stop on this episode and they're in their car or they're finishing their run, how does somebody take that first step to shifting from life is happening to me to life is happening for me?
One of the things I love to do when the next challenge comes up for you, whatever it may be, it could be as small as somebody cutting you off in traffic, or a schedule change, someone misses a meeting or a dinner, or you know, whatever, is I like to ask these questions. What's great about this? What does this make possible? And what can I learn from this?
Love it.
Any of those questions can help reframe your mind on a challenging situation. Sometimes it's hard to come up with an answer about what's great about this, but you can always learn from any situation. And like I said, I see all challenges as creating opportunities. So what does this make possible? Mm-hmm. If somebody misses a meeting with you, does it open up your schedule to do something else, right? Right? If you miss out on that job opportunity, you don't get selected for the job, what does it make possible? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can start going after a different job. Maybe you weren't meant for that job. Maybe something else is in your future if you just work hard and go for it.
Right.
You never know, but you've got to shift your mindset and just go after it.
Excellent. You've definitely delivered on that. I think that's something very practical that somebody could start doing, because it takes work to shift yourself from that life is happening to me to life is happening for me. I don't want to make it sound like it's easy. It's easier for some than others, but
yeah, it's taken me a lot of practice to get to this point, by the way. It didn't happen overnight, right? It's years.
Yeah.
But you start somewhere, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Journey of 1,000 steps journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just being able to pause, self-reflect, ask yourself one or two or all three of those questions, I think is a great practical thing that people can do. So I appreciate you for that. Anywhere else that people can find you, or is that website that you listed earlier that the main thing that you want to put out there for folks?
That website, ownyourcareerownyourlife.com/mistakes, the best place to go, but I'm all over social media. I post almost every day on LinkedIn, which is where I'm most active. Instagram, I'm very active there as well. Posting a lot of stories and stuff from my life that I like to own and enjoy.
Yeah.
And I'm on Facebook too, but LinkedIn, Instagram, find me there, and go sign up for that report.
Perfect. And I'll definitely be doing that. Andy, thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for rescheduling, because we were originally scheduled on the front end of COVID and I was over in Hawaii and just couldn't make the technology work. So very grateful for you and bringing a powerful message to me and people in my audience. So much appreciation to you.
Well, thank you so much, Nick, for having me on. This has been so fun for me just to talk about this stuff and share. And if we help one person, by the way, if you learned something today and you were like, yes, I needed this and it changed something for you, please reach out to both of us. Tell Nick, connect with me, tell me, because that's why we do this.
Absolutely. Yes. That's wind in our sails, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Take care, my friend.
All right. Take care.
Well, there it was, Andy Storch and me. We covered a lot of ground. I super hope that you got a ton out of that. I got to let you know, too, that shortly after recording this episode with him, he broke his leg. I think he still has a broken leg if you're listening to this right now, kind of at the end of July 2020. So hit him up on Instagram, send him a message, tell him that you're thinking about him, because that's a big bummer to have a broken leg, especially when you're riding the amount of momentum that he is and was. But it won't hold him back, I'm sure of that. Hey, you also need to go over to his website and get that report that he made available to me and to my audience. That was the top 5 most common career mistakes. And the way that you can get that
is to go over to his website, ownyourcareeronyourlife.com/mistakes, and you'll be able to get that free report. So you've just invested an hour of your time, an hour of your life, and I hope that you got something out of that. Andy gives you three questions that you can ask yourself when something isn't going your way. Ask yourself one or all three of these questions. What's great about this? What is this thing making other things possible for me? And what can I learn from this? And that was all part of Andy's idea of how do you shift your life from life happening to you to life happening for you. And life is all about feedback. And when things go our way, that's feedback. And when things don't go our way, that's also feedback. But only look at it as feedback. Keep on your personal mission, stick to your core values. And again, when something doesn't go your way, remember Andy's tip. Ask yourself one of those questions. What is great about this? What is this making possible? And what can I learn from this? Well, it's just excellent mindset upgrade tips from my good friend, Andy Storch. Now the rest is up to you. If you want to shift your life from happening to you versus life happening for you, then get to work. Start applying some of these tips. Go back through some of my other podcasts. You know, every single episode gives you something that you can apply in the here and now to help you upgrade your life. My website is www.nicksotelo.com/TUL podcast, the Upgraded Life Podcast. While you're over at my website, don't forget to check out the three opportunity buttons at the very top. They are scheduling a time with me. I'll give you a free 30-minute strategy session. Checking out CBD products from Nature's Ultra. And then also, if you're looking to create an additional stream of income, I can help you out with that too. This takes 20 minutes of your time. Click on the button that says Income Boost. Give me your name and email, and I'll send you a presentation. Thank you again so much for listening to my show, the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm dedicated to this show because I've seen too many people live a life that just really wasn't about realizing and reaching their potential. So if you listen to this show and you were somehow, some way inspired to take action, let me know by going over to Apple Podcasts, leave me a 5-star review, and that will tell me that you enjoyed the show. This is Dr. Nick Sotelo, and I'm urging you to do something today to realize and reach your potential, and I'll catch you on the next show.